that the presence of elders is assumed. I don't want to go down this line too much, because I do know that in some quarters there's still that idea lingering around that, you know, we shouldn't have elders today for people with an exclusive background. Sorry, brother. Yes. Absolutely, or the whole assembly, indeed. Yeah. I think the tragedy is that we think of the terrible disaster that the big division of 1848 was. You know, I think if that had not happened, I think that was a master stroke of Satan. I think assemblies would, some people, even Brethren Fulby outside assemblies, have commented that if that had not happened, the assembly movement might well have swept most of the evangelical world. You know, it was a real master stroke of Satan, the division, you know, the exclusive and independent assemblies that happened in 1848. A masterstroke of Satan, the divided brethren apart. But those who followed that line, the line of Derby, it must be said, in all fairness, it is absolutely tragic that the leading company that was left of them went to the absolute other extreme and ended up being cultic and accepting all the dictates of Jim Taylor Jr. Isn't that amazing? They rejected eldership, but they ended up with one man, so-called prophetic rule, you know, the angel of the churches. I mean, it was really an absolute parody of anything the New Testament portrays. So I think there's a tremendous safeguard, isn't there, in the plurality of elders. It means that one man cannot gain, in principle, sometimes it happens, but the principle is that one man should not gain dominance over any individual congregation. Yes, exactly. Yes.
And they are basically invincible because they're all independently operating units with the same goal.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy.
And as the persecuted church had to survive,
yes.
That's the same principle.
Thank you, that's interesting.
And,
yes.
And I thought of that too. If Satan wanted to defeat the church, he can't go after one man like the Pope. He has to go to every assembly in the world one by one. If they're
functioning properly. Mm-hmm. Yes, Keith. Right.
Of multiplicity. And I could hear somebody saying, well, yeah, he's talking to multiple elders because he's talking to those who are scattered in Asia, Cappadocia, Bithynia, and Galatia. So these are people from various churches together. In other words, there could be an elder of Church A in Bithynia, mm-hmm. Church B in Cappadocia. And so how do you answer that other than the fact Acts 20 comes to mind, that the elders of Ephesus,
yes,
even there,
just turning that up.
They could maybe suggest that there was more than one assembly in Ephesus, but I would say the onus of the proof is on them then.
Now this is another view that I haven't come across. Again, I see with no disrespect, this is more a Baptist view, isn't it? That there is one elder in each church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's another kind of variant. Although what we would tend to call elders, these brethren would tend to call deacons, and some of them would teach there is an elder i.e. that, so it's a very, it's not slightly different than Presbyterian. They would say the teaching elder is the elder. I mean, now that you mentioned that, Keith, there was a conservative Baptist, small c, not the dominant, you know, but that's helpful issue, Keith. Yes, Sam, you were raising 14 and. That's very helpful, Sam.
You see that throughout the book of Acts. You'll always see elders and so forth, and you'll see persons.
That's exceedingly helpful, Sam. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, just going to mention briefly, there's a brother near us who's now actually ministering in the States. And it was a very conservative Baptist church, very sound in its viewpoint. And he taught from the platform that he was the elder. It wasn't necessarily in principle he taught this. There only should be one elder. But he talked from the platform, he was the only man who was qualified to be the elder in that church. A brother who now meets with us was there, that's how I know. And they actually taught that from the platform. He was the only qualified elder. But this brother actually asked him at the end, could you put a chart up at the back, brother, and tell us all the qualities and see how we're getting on, and mark up one or two others to be sure that maybe we'll soon be a few more elders. It's quite a presumptuous thing to say, a good man though he is, isn't it, that he was the only one who met the qualities of it. So that's very helpful. Thank you, Ricky and Sam.
I have been in three or four assemblies, including one that my dad started, where you have a founder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a real danger that we have to be careful about. We have a founding elder in that assembly. He has more of a vested interest because he was the one who had the initial burden.
Right.
Appreciated a little bit above the other elders because he was the one who got this whole ball rolling. And I think we just have to bend over backwards to not recognize this one brother who just kind of had two votes, everybody else has won because he was the one who actually started.
And you could have variants in that, like a brother who's kept an assembly going and then maybe others come and it grows a bit, but he still thinks that he's got a special role, but even though he invites others to join him. Yeah, I've had that experience, which is slightly different.
I'd like to add to that, I think in some circles, I've seen where, actually George Barber, I was talking to him one day, he coined the term the bull elder, and he's describing a phenomenon whereby one there's a plurality, but one man, whether it's through the concept of a founding elder or not, just seems to maybe presume a sense of being the lead.
No.
And I think that's a dangerous thing. There's a I have to be careful coming up when I say next, but there is an author that writes a chapter in a book that's titled First Among Equals, which I think is actually an attempt to describe a phenomenon that is simply a difference in gift among several men.
Yes.
So, for example, in the group of men, and we'll say three in this case of discussion, if one of them has more administrative gift than the other two, that one might be, from the outside, naked eye, seen as one who is more visible or the lead. But in reality, it's not first among equals. It's really just functioning within the oversight.
Yes.
And I think what's important within the oversight is that particular one that might have that bent, as in this case, the administration aspect, he goes the extra mile, as Ken pointed out, so that the group doesn't look at him to be the lead. That there is a special sense where he's submitting to the other two. I think you have to work hard in the oversight so you don't sort of fall into the trap of just thinking that way normally, because that was spread over, I think, the assembly at large. And I think that's been a problem. And some assemblies I've heard this, this is recognizable, I think. For example, one fellow I remember, he used to always say, "Well, I'm not going to tell you other men what to do, but this is my opinion." And that's what we did. You know, I think that's a definite symptom of a very serious problem. There's an influx in the boardroom in a lot of assemblies today in the leadership that instead of operating as a church and a group of believers, we operate as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, you know, there is a hierarchy that exists in corporate America or throughout the world, and a lot of those philosophies have been adopted, and that's wrong. I think, as Steve has pointed out, to stay away from that is almost a need to take a lesser position, to allow others to be viewed as making the decision in some cases. Or you do fall into that danger of, you know, he's the CEO.
Yes.
The chief elder operating.
Yeah.
And these guys are just on the board of directors. That's not the way it works.
An honest decline.
You can make it up.
Or the you. The question was, so the elder of elder, and coming from another background.
Excuse me, brother. Brother Jack's trying to make a comment here. Yeah.
I've heard the expression of the elder of elders, and in another church or assembly, mm-hmm. be more exclusive. Mm-hmm. And when I asked, where do you find that? I was quote a verse in Acts 15, referring to them, and the verse started like this. After that's verse 13, after they had become silent, James answered, saying, and I know that we don't have this view here, and no one shares, but we may have this verse quoted showing that James is kind of the one who made the decision, but it's not.
I think it was just simply summing up the discussion of the whole group, and someone's got to do that. We're not just talking about complete disorder, are we? Just in the others. And he was, I mean, if even informally to act as chairman, even if you rotate it or moderator at each meeting, even if you rotate it, or perhaps one perhaps slightly more gifted might want to do that. And I think Steve's right. I think that would only be a matter of gift. It wouldn't be a formal position. I mean, I've heard of assemblies that talk about so-and-so being chairman of the elders, which really is the same thing, or really is the first among equals, isn't it? Well, but nonetheless, there should be someone will have to chair the meeting. In fact, that's good. Better that than just turning up and just running from one subject to the other, and nothing gets ever decided. And I think that's only the role that James was taking, was actually moderating that, which after all was a public meeting. It wasn't just a private elders discussion we have in Acts chapter 15. Roy, you wanted to come in, brother.
We had some discussion about recognizing elders for new meetings. You know, how to bring about the elders. What it was done in this room, maybe. You know, a new meeting started, and the elders have not been recognized.
Mm-hmm. Can I just make a more, when people are thinking about that question, just add a little bit to something I said earlier. My argument against the exclusive type view that Timothy and Titus were apostolic delegates would run along lines like this, that it was nothing as official as that, that these men were simply missionaries or church planters, and they were doing what a missionary or church planter has to do. He has to point out the men in a new work who are showing the qualities and gifts for eldership. I think that's all that's involved. Is not the official apostolic delegate idea. And that brings us to the point that presumably the person who's involved in founding the work has the responsibility of pointing out and encouraging some to take that role. Would that meet with approval?
Yes.
But when you don't what we've done, now we're not a new work in any manner of means, but we're a slightly new work in the sense the personnel is different than what it was a few years ago. We had recently a situation where two older brethren felt they didn't want to continue because of, first of all, their age and state of health, and also one or two circumstances that arisen where their judgment had been questioned. And it was all, that was all resolved reasonably amicably, but they felt that they should probably not continue, and taking all of that into account. So the two of us who were left then approached some other brethren in the meeting whom we felt, you know, would be helpful to us and would have the confidence of the assembly. And of the three we approached, I'm sad to say only one expressed a willingness at this point in time to join us. So we then announced to the assembly a few weeks later that Brother A and Brother B were no longer acting as elders, though we still held them in high esteem, and we would still be helping and still be taking part in the meetings, etc., etc. Praised them for the work they had done, and said we would still be looking to them for advice, because it was all relatively amicable. Please don't let this thing out of proportion. But then Brother C was now joining the two remaining elders, and we looked to the Lord that he would bless us together. And we thought that was, you know, in a sense, letting the church know through the elders well.
Was there a point where, was it the elders that decided these men met the qualifications?
Yes.
Should there be a point in which the whole assembly has to determine?
Yeah, I mean, in practical terms, Mike, with us, it was just the two of us who thought we didn't have an awful lot to pick from, to be honest. And we picked we only thought there were three men who would be seriously. And well, there might have been four, but one of them had already indicated to us that he felt he was too old to start again, having been elder in another assembly. We didn't do that, Mike. I mean, I think maybe biblically you were in a better path, but you know, we were a smallish assembly, not a new assembly, and we did at least tell the assembly, though, who knew that X and Y were no longer in official sense acting, and that someone else would still be esteemed as older brethren, and another brother was coming on to. I've been in other assemblies where nothing is ever said, although there were official elders, nobody ever, they were never announced who they were. You just kind of work that out, you know, somehow or other.
our assembly had no elders for about 15 or 20 years, and then we went through a process of looking to recognize oversight. It was a very painful situation, and I think the first thing I would say is it was born on the foundation of about 5 years of you guys getting in the living room and praying together. That was the first thing I would say. The second thing is, as we evaluated looked at the things that we know, going from what we know to what we don't know, what we did know was that an elder had to have the desire for the work willing.
That's here.
That he was doing the work, but it says, I think the Thessalonians is to recognize those who labor. The word labor is kind of a significant term. And then of course there's qualifications. So we figured, and of course the Holy Spirit sort of roused the whole lot. Three of those parameters, but we just dealt with those three and dependency on the Spirit of God. Whatever scheme we came up with, each one of those had to be true at all points in time. So we sort of did like a triangularization, sort of kind of a model. And then what we did, which I think is a mistake, and I wouldn't do it again, was we taught on qualifications to the assembly. And then we selected three men and we asked them,
go to each family or family unit in the assembly and ask the question, who do you see doing the work? But notice the problem. The problem is we taught in qualifications, but the question was who's doing the work. Since they had the teaching on the qualifications, they answered the question of who was qualified, not who's doing the work. We should have taught on what the work of the elder is. We should have taught on this passage here. We should have taught what it means to be a shepherd and how the chief shepherd shepherds, and had some indictments for lack of shepherding in Ezekiel. That's what we should have done. And therefore, the answer would have been a lot easier for the flock. Now, it was very delicate procedure because the flock would say, oh, isn't it nice that we can vote? And we would constantly go back and say, listen, this is not any sort of vote. And if you're under that misunderstanding, then you've totally corrupted the concept. The concept is that you're prayerfully asking the Lord who is doing the work of the overseer. That's the concept. And we're asking you to be in labor, to labor on your knees about that issue and that question alone. Now, that what that did for us is it generated a bit of a list. And some of the men who thought they were doing the work were really excellent deacons, but they weren't doing the work of the elders. And that made some of them, I think, upset. Others that were doing the work, they had no idea they were doing the work. We took that short list, and then we looked at those men under the microscope of qualifications. If you do it the other way and say, well, here are the qualifications and who are qualified, you take every man through the ringer and you went through the washing machine. It can be quite painful. So we think that it was wiser to start from the idea of labor and work through the issue of qualifications. And at that time, of course, we threw in the concept of desire. Then when we got down to that point, that group of men that we did the initial visited those, that short list of potential elders, and actually spoke both with the man and his wife. So it was very important that there was some unity involved in that, in that type of decision. And what we did is we came to a group of three, and we didn't recognize them. We met for a year, and we prayed together, and we discussed really how we thought about issues. And that story I was telling Alan about, that's one of those meetings where that fellow said, oh, I view the work of the elders to always review. That was Bible, and that was the end of the day. Well, not exact. and then eventually that process of waiting was very important, because in that time, some of those men were weeded out. And one of those men, was actually the man that said, I think we should review, left. Kind of a long story, but he just left. So that was kind of our mechanism that went through. I'm not sure it was right or totally wrong, but I think there's some very important concepts in the process.
We struggled a little bit with the plurality. What is plurality? Two.
You're in a new work,
yes.
Ross,
in a new work.
And you have elders.
Yes.
That's not a leading. That wasn't a critical question. Just a matter of fact. You do have elders. Yeah. And did they emerge? If I don't bring any confidence, but Steve's given us a lot of detail here.
Steve and I are the elders. I'll let John answer the question, because he attends Lake Lanier as well, and maybe we struggled with it for, we talked about it in men's meetings for, I guess, a year or more, and prayed a lot about it. We looked at character and qualifications and what the work was. We recognized in the men's meetings, anyway, who was involved, who were doing the work. And it was evident. And we decided to just move forward. The assembly as a whole felt the need for recognize. We knew who was doing the work, so why not just recognize them?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to give them a title or any special position. It was just for the order.
But the struggle was we had two.
Yeah.
And we thought we needed more.
Okay.
And I think that's what maybe delayed us a little bit in the process, because you're always hopeful and praying that someone will rise up to be doing the
And yet, what you had mentioned, probably would have reasoned things out a lot sooner to find out who is desirous, who really has that passion to do the work, and start with that versus, we've got a group of men here, we can put a list together and follow these, but yet is there a desire? Is there a real passion to serve the Lord in this way? And I've been in leadership elsewhere, and it's not an easy task. There's a lot expected of you, and I really, the idea of having the wife involved as well is so true. And they get the brunt of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The pressures that we may take home, the criticisms that we might get, and so forth. And they're not only the support, but they're getting some of that abuse as well.
On a practical standpoint, how many? Although the scripture just says, in the first, having served as an elder among six, among three, and among two, I would say, from just from a practical point of view, that I would recommend a minimum of three. When you have two elders, that's an awesome. Because you can get into a situation where there's different of opinions that almost fail me. Lord, but we have three men that are speaking the mind of the Lord and trying to pray together and work together. It seems to facilitate reaching resolution a little bit quicker. I think it's neat that the Trinity. The three of them have decided to leave. That's a good pattern to follow.
So, can I ask you a question? Some would say that very thing, have at least three, so that there's always an odd number and you never have to deal with
it. Well, I didn't say that.
I just want to clarify.
But just from facilitating decisions, so often two get hung up. And it's not a voting situation, but the third many times will hear the opinion of one brother, they'll hear the opinion of the other brother. He might be the moderator who is able to bring the two opposing brothers together to the middle point, while one brother or both brothers might be having a blind spot. The third brother can see it, point it out. So,
I think what we came down to the fact that we recognized that as an assembly, we needed elders. The number we struggled with was two or three, but we thought that it was more important to take a step and put leadership into a small group. And we've only got seven families, so it's not a huge number of people or pool to choose from either.
Mm-hmm.
And the willingness was one of the last questions, I think, that we asked. And that's why we only have recognized two elders, because potential third that perhaps met the qualifications was not willing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the experience I've had.
If you really want a hot potato, what do you do when one of them loses his zeal and therefore he just sees to it that he comes to all the meetings? In fact, in some assemblies, you can't do the work of an elder before you become an elder because the only work is to attend the meeting.
That's a biblical pattern, though.
Also, it was great that we need to be really cautious about the process, because if you have somebody who is recognized who doesn't have the heart, but has a title, it's almost the job for life kind of thing. It's very difficult to deal with that. And I know our family right now doesn't have any recognized elders. And it's not because we're taking the exclusive.
No.
But we just come from such a bad experience of a man with a title but no heart that it's almost like the pendulum hasn't come back to level peg yet, because we're just kind of still licking our wounds because of that, and we're not wishing.
Sure.
We have a monthly brotherhood meeting where anybody who's interested meets together about the needs of the assembly. So far, it's going very well.
We realize it's not ideal, and we want to move towards that, but I guess we're just almost moving forward in human subjugation, having seen the devastation that we caused previously.
Let me say something else about the two elders. If you've got these two, so they have good arguments for at least three. But the problem with two elders, you may have one elder who is, what word I want to use, who dominates or is, who feels a little stronger, is more vocal. And that elder always, of course, that other elder in his direction. And essentially, you wind up with one elder instead of two. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one more reason
for
having that third elder.
I'd like to get an answer to Rose's question. Does anyone have any idea when you have a person, an elder in title only, how do you handle that?
So the other elders ideally should recognize that to kind of police themselves. You got a group of three or four elders, and one is just defuncting there by title only. That's something that the other elders should be recognizing and dealing with, encouraging people to get on with the work, take up the plow, and move forward, or to take themselves on.
I think there are a couple of principles that are good to keep in mind with shepherding the flock. It's interesting, we have these really helpful prescriptions here in 1 Peter 5, but the devil's in the details always, isn't it? And working out, if we have, what is the process of how we meet? How often do we meet? Is it, and many of these things are stipulated. Is it a title for life? There's nothing in Scripture to indicate that it is, but almost in every assembly I've been associated with, it's assumed to be a title for life, and they will not step aside even when they're beyond capacity to really do the shepherding work.
You notice in our place we actually did have two brethren who did step aside.
Well, that can happen.
In terms of act of meeting with the elders, they're still doing some, they're still taking part in the meetings and still have an interest in the assembly, but they're not. They no longer want to meet with us.
The other thing I think is communication is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Though we don't believe in a clergy-laity system, we have a national and regional conference that's called Elders and Workers, and it's kind of like it's only for the elders and workers and no one else is invited kind of a thing.
That's actually not true.
It's a subtle thing. I know it's not the intent, but it, you know, could be perceived by not by elders and workers, but more by the other people that aren't in that category. And what helps there is communication. And what I found in some assemblies that have had difficulties with elders, which Lafayette had a similar experience to what Washington went through, and they're doing a men's meeting or brotherhood meeting, and it's working very well too so far because of the situation. But they communicate well. All brethren want to know what's going on. Even brethren that aren't involved in shepherding, they want to know what's going on. They have a right to know what's going on. And what was going on before was the elders would meet in a room and lock the door and close the blinds. Some manual on eldership that you had to keep the secret society thing and not share anything that you discuss with the rest of them. And that's so boring.
That's right. I agree with that too.
Yeah. And then the third thing was, you're going to get there, brother, in verse 5, but the second half of verse 5, I think, every elder needs to understand all of you, he says, after he addresses the younger people. Be submissive to one another.
Mm-hmm.
No hierarchy, you're submissive to one another, and if you're clothed with humility, like he said, you will be submissive to one another.
You know, some practical ways we try to do that is if we're traveling, we try to make sure that every other elder is aware of each other's schedule. And if an elder says, "You know, brother, I think you're gone a little bit too much," and we don't take offense to that, we rearrange the schedule. That's what happens. And on another note, if you talk about communication, I would say to you that that's not only between the elders and the flock, which I think goes along with the concept of being among the flock or being among the people, but also within the oversight. It's very easy for the dual or triple group, three or four men in the group, to become shifts passing in the night. I think it's very important. So on a practical level, one of us just takes the role of calling the other two and making sure we're all talking on the same level. I spoke to Brother Keith, and this is what we talked about. Rob, I want to make sure you're aware of it. Did you have another idea? Maybe this would be an opportunity for you to be aware of it and pray about it. We can revisit when we meet. We think that in oversight there are two big responsibilities we have. Now, not only does this pastor then take some of our great responsibilities, but we have also adapted a thought, and I think really an appropriate concept from when the apostles are appointed deacons, and they devoted themselves to the word of God in prayer. So one of the bare minimum things we try to do every week is to pray for the assembly, and I don't mean in generalities, I actually mean very specifically. And that begs for a little bit of privacy, but we certainly don't want to cause any embarrassment or hurt.
Yes, brother.
Can I get, Sam and Mike and Price's comment for me as far as... Personally, I don't see how an 85-year-old man can function as an elder.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, mm-hmm. I mean, most of them are napping in the middle of the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in place that you see to move these guys into an advisory role? Or should they, as long as they are functioning as an elder, they can be an elder. Is there such a thing as term limits? You know, I hate to use that because that's a political word, but in reality, if there's not something in place, you wind up with a 90-year-old man being an elder.
Mm.
I think that boils down to...
But is there something in place at your places that says...
No, you don't find it prescribed. What you have is, first of all, a group of men that are godly to begin with and that speak the mind of the Lord and are meeting in a humble fashion one for another. And so when things like that happen, I think if you've got one brother that just doesn't have the capacity to age or illness or whatever, it's incumbent upon the other brothers to recognize that, deal with that. That's a difficult situation. It's a hard situation, but no difficult than any other difficult situations that elders have to deal with week after week after week. And so, you know, the other godly men in prayer and humility approach that other brother and discuss it, talk with him, and see what his understanding is and see how he views himself in the work. And through a time of prayer, the wisdom of the Lord, hopefully, there's an agreement that's reached that, well, maybe I should step down and allow some younger brothers to come along and take leadership. But it has to be done through great discretion. It has to be done slowly. It has to be done with great humility and meekness and a bunch of kindness for the individual. It should be the opposite of the way business handles it.
I think it may not even mean, it may not even mean just stepping down at that point, but you might offer assistance,
sure,
with some of the responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be a way of gradually bringing in terms of realizing that, well, mm-hmm. I've not been able to manage some of these responsibilities. And in fact, I'd be welcome to have it.
Yes.
You have been there in an advisory capacity. And then maybe the time comes and he says, well, I think you need a younger person to actually carry some of the load.
I think historically, the assemblies in North America have not done a good job of passing the baton on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a mindset that we have to adopt, that even on the Word of Life Committee, one of the things we talked about is getting younger men on and with a view of us fading out. And we've got to have that. We've got to always be thinking of the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's got to be a mindset.
I had some of the folks in assembly. Portland, Oregon. They're fairly large assembly. Started as a small assembly. Growing maybe each year between 300 to 300 people in fellowship. they have a system, you know, that so they have got a group of elders, very wise men, you know, the world. And they have got the, you know, the elders and then the deacons, and they have got another group, you know, responsibilities for the various activities and things like that. And supposing an elder is not available effectively for a period of time, the other elders will come together, take a unanimous decision to step down for a certain, you know, period of time. Still he is to be available. And they see that, you know, that he's, you know, working very well. You see, I have been associated with, you know, very large assemblies, you know, in the past many years, in Middle East, Berlin, in Bombay, you know, in New York, and things like that. See, what happens is, now, in all, you know, this, the problem, you know, the only thing is considered to be a place of position, and people want it, not for service, not for place, not for position. You see that? You see, and once we take out that, you know, an elder who is not able to teach and to, you know, develop the assembly and having a proper vision, if that is lost, and then you give the opportunity to people who have the ability to maneuver and things like that to come to the position, that is a very dangerous situation. That is what is happening. And then the younger generation, they show resentment, and the whole confusion takes place in the assembly. See, the whole problem is that eldership should be a place of, you know, serving, you know, serving leadership, and develop the assembly with a proper vision.
One of the difficulties is there's not a great retirement plan, meaning that there's, as someone steps down from leadership, they almost fade into the woodwork. And I think a lot of these men who want to be involved in leadership don't want to give up serving the Lord. And yet, a lot of times they do get relegated to the few.
Exactly.
Right, but you know, the idea is, well, I'm retired now, so I don't have to be in service as much.
Yeah.
That's nonsense.
Yes. I think the idea of servant leadership that our brother John struck is important. Mark chapter 10, the Gentiles, great ones, exercise authority. Mark 10 and 43, yet it shall not be so among you. Whosoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. Whosoever desires to be first shall be the slave of all. That's anticipating what we've got in these succeeding verses. And that's been running through quite a lot of the things that have been said. Sam, how are we doing for time? Is this about time to?
Half 10.
There's been quite a full discussion, but you were one of the first to speak, so you should have the last word, Greg.
Well, maybe we'll pick it up later, because I was going to open up a whole other can of worms.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what it is now, anyway. We talked about the older elders, you say that. You mentioned people who were asked, they were willing to become elders and declined, and we've seen that in our own assembly. I'd like to talk about those young men. How does a young man make that decision? What does it say if he doesn't want that? How does he make the right decision? And frankly, I'll tell you what I have in mind is, you know, no one's asked me, so it hasn't come up yet, but maybe in a few years, you know, it might come up.
Mm-hmm.
And how am I going to make that decision if, you know, the opportunity should come up? Maybe we can talk about that later.
I think it's important to you, situation. We have this is a whole delicate issue for transferring the baton from the one generation to the next. And I spent some time in the Orient. I've learned very much what the meaning is of loss of face.
Mm-hmm.
And proposing is, I think, a very graceful way of taking a step aside or offering assistance rather than asking somebody to step down, because that is viewed, or that can easily be viewed by the assembly as something happened and it's not working and therefore he's now denoted.
Yeah.
And I think we all want to carefully guard as an assembly together that that is not the case. I saw in Holland a brother who was involved in a very early part of a work that got started, and he was affected, but then it grew, and it grew way over his head. But he was still the elder, and he did not know how to get out. And he didn't want to get out because he felt it was an embarrassing, it was a loss of faith. And later on, he did step down, cut forth, but he started functioning much, much better because he had a very specific gift that he was now free to exercise, and previously he did not have that opportunity. So it's a very delicate situation where we all bear a role.
Did that come down to being cold and humility?
Absolutely. That was very helpful, Brennan, and we'll continue briefly before we move on to...